What I'm going to do, I'm going to spend the next 6 months be out visiting, talking to people, alumni, legislators, whoever that would like to visit with the president, people on and off campus too. And then in January, we're going to start a long-term visioning, strategic planning exercise. It'll take a year, and we'll call it K-State 2025.
Kansas State University gets a new president as Dr. Kirk Schultz takes the reins. Schultz was chosen by the Kansas Board of Regents to succeed John Wiefald, who has served as K-State head for 23 years. Schultz comes to Kansas State after serving as Vice President for Research and Economic Development at Mississippi State University. Schultz's selection concludes a nationwide search which began back in May of 2008. That search involved faculty, students, staff, the K-State Alumni Association, the KSU Foundation, the Board of Regents, and many others. On today's Perspective program, some thoughts of the new president as he takes over in a time of turmoil. Perspective is a weekly public affairs program produced by Research and Extension at Kansas State University over the K-State Radio Network. I'm Richard Baker. Dr. Kirk Schultz began his collegiate career in 1991 at the University of North Dakota as an assistant professor of chemical engineering. He then moved to Michigan Tech, where he eventually was named chair of the Department of Chemical Engineering. In 2001, he moved to Mississippi State University to become director of the Dave C. Swam School of Chemical Engineering. 4 years later, Dr. Schultz was named dean of the James Worth Bagley College of Engineering and the inaugural holder of the Ernest W. and Mary Ann Davenport, Jr. Endowed Chair. Then, in 2007, he was named interim vice president for research and economic development and was named to the permanent position later that year. President Schultz is a member of ABET, the recognized accreditor for college and university programs in applied science, computing, engineering, and technology, and a member of its Engineering Accreditation Commission. He also is an active member of the American Institute of Chemical Engineers and the American Society for Engineering Education. So, after a week on campus, what's going through the head of the new president of Kansas State University?
I continue to be amazed at the passion that people who work here, that students have, that people have for just K-State. And so you go out and sort of visit folks, that really comes out. It's hard to find somebody who's been here to school that doesn't really have a lot of passion for the university. I don't mean just athletics. I mean whether they've studied in the agricultural field, they're a business person, an engineer, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. Anything about the university they feel really good about. Our campus is, secondly, very pretty. When I was here before in February, everybody goes, it's a beautiful campus. Well, you know, as you know, Kansas in February has a unique beauty to it, let's put it that way. But this time of year, it's just a gorgeous walking campus, and it looks great. And everybody here gets along fairly well, and they like working here, and so I think it's going to be a great place to live and work.
As you come in after an administration that's been here for over two decades, what kind of problems do you face right off the bat?
Some of it is that, as most everybody knows, President Wiefald was not didn't like to use a lot of technology, so didn't use a computer, things like this. So probably one of the biggest challenges is figuring out, for me as a new person coming in, creative ways to communicate with a large segment of the population. So everybody from the 13 and 14-year-olds who we hope to have as a student to our 85-year-old alumni and everybody in between. And you can't do one style. There'll be some people listen to the radio, some will look at print media, some like electronic social networking like Facebook, some like email. So the bottom line is you got to do them all. And that's probably the biggest challenge is how can I be accessible and communicating with everybody in this broad range of folks.
Seems to me that you have two problem areas that you confront right off the bat, and that's just the current economic malaise that we're in. The other is there are some problems on campus that we're also having to confront. First of all, the economic problems that we have. What do you think, and I know you're going to have to couch this in diplomatic terms, but what do you think of the job that the legislature did with its cutbacks and the process it went through during the last session?
The Kansas legislature was faced with the same issues that most other legislatures were, as a continuing drop in the income as you're trying to put together the budget, which means when you think you may have something in March, by 6 weeks later, it's changed again. I think they did about as good a job as they could, given that everything's down. I think the challenge will be for higher education and for Kansas State is we need to be communicating out there what is our impact on the state of Kansas. And the saying goes, all politics is local. We need to make sure that folks in western Kansas understand what it is that K-State is doing for western Kansas. The folks in Kansas City need to know what K-State's doing for Kansas City. So we have to customize our message, and we have to make sure that we let our legislators know, hey, we're having a big impact on the state, and it's going to make a big difference keeping our funding as high as they possibly can, given all the different constraints that they have. So I'm pretty sympathetic. I think they did the best job they can. It's my job and the university's job, though, to make sure that we make the best pitch possible that maintaining our funding, especially this next year, is going to be really critical for us to continue to offer the services that the state of Kansas expects from their land-grant university.
How much of a cut, how much of a hit did Kansas State take in the budget?
I don't know an exact percentage, and I apologize, but I think we're looking on the order of $20 million. So that's a pretty sizable number. So the big issue is there's some things that we did before that you're just not going to be able to do as well. So class sizes creep up a little bit. We didn't fill several hundred open faculty and staff positions. So we got our faculty and staff are really stepping up to try and make sure they do a good job educationally. But still, if I'm used to having 20 people to teach a certain subject, and I got 15, something's got to give. And what we're really concerned about, and what I'm very concerned about, as we look at the next year, what happens if now that unit has 10 people? So we're actually going to have to do some selective hiring, because we got some places on campus we're going to have to put some people into. So we're going to have to be very creative financially and figure out how we can do that, because we've got to maintain our educational quality for our students. That's why we're here.
We've taken hits before like this. Does that cause a problem that just is really hard to rectify no matter how far down the road you go?
I think so. Part of it is we solved those previously by jacking tuition way up. And I think one of the things that we're particularly sensitive to is we've got to maintain our affordability for our students. And so this year we're going to hold to about a 3.9% sort of tuition increase, around cost of living kind of a number. And we're not going to be able to work our way out of this by simply jacking tuition up by huge percentages to sort of close our budget down. So we're going to have to lean up some.
Are we going to lose students in the fall because of this?
You know, I don't know. Our enrollment numbers are looking pretty good. And according to Pat Bosco, our vice president for student affairs, but, you know, with less money out there and less financial aid and some of that, I think we might see a few less students, but I can't even quantify that. I have no idea. It's sort of an art and a science to it. You just don't know how many are actually going to show up. But, you know, if I'm used to having $100 and then somebody gives me $90 and then somebody gives me $80 and asks me to do the same thing, at some point the thing we've got to preserve is student quality and quality of our educational experience, which may mean that we're going to have to be a little bit smaller.
So there is the possibility, a real possibility in your mind, that because of the budget constraints that somebody might not be able to attend Kansas State in the future?
Oh, I think there's no question that that as tuition and things go up, if we're not careful and we can't make sure that we're giving them enough financial aid and things like that, there may be some residents out there that say, hey, I just can't put together the financial package, or the university not able to offer enough so that my son or daughter or grandchild can go there. I think that's some financial realities that are out there.
Is this a time when perhaps we're going to have to work even closer with community colleges?
I think regardless of the economic times, I think that's the future of higher education in many states, is there are going to be some young people that decide to stay close to home. The community colleges offer a great educational experience. It's different than being at a research university, but it's certainly going to be more cost-effective for some families to do that for a couple years and transfer. So we've got to make sure that we continue to build those relationships because, you know what, KU, Wichita State, Fort Hayes, everybody is interested in those same transfer students. So we need to make sure this is the place, the university of choice in the state for those two-year students.
I wear another hat as an instructor, and one of the things that I think I see in my classes is that we, because of the way we do tuition and how expensive tuition is, we are kind of turning ourselves into, and I don't want to denigrate vo-techs, but we're turning ourselves into a vo-tech. It's possible for a student to go through Kansas State and never take an ethics course. It's possible to go through Kansas State and never have a music course or a literature course. And the students have a set number of dollars. They cannot experiment. When I went to school, there was a set tuition, and I could take as many courses as I wanted. I could experiment every single semester. They can't afford to do that anymore. Is there any way that as president you see that we can get back to more than turning out, what would you call them, technicians, and turn out educated individuals?
Yeah, I think we certainly want to always be turning out educated individuals. But what you describe is a challenge because we're dealing with some of the core subjects of the university experience. And it's an interest. I've come from one of the more technological fields in engineering, which tends to be very structured and very little room for those exploratory type experiences. And on the other hand, we may have our students in liberal arts, which still have a very broad set of directions and things that they can take in their classes. So you can actually have quite an interesting debate on campus about this very topic, about whether or not we need to broaden things out. It's interesting, in engineering, if we talk to our alumni, at my previous institution in particular, every year, every decade that alumni go out, they put less relevance typically on their professional classes they took and more relevance on the broadening experiences they had. So you talk to somebody who's worked in engineering for 50 years, they may say, you know, the class that I in my lifetime got the most out of was taking this particular class in art appreciation or something like that. So I think it speaks highly to we need to make sure that our students come out of here as educated young men and women. And I think that's something that we'll have to – there's some challenge on campus. Not everybody's going to agree that that's exactly what we need to do.
We also see a move toward distance learning. Is that a path K-State needs to be headed toward to reach out more with our classes?
Yeah, I think we have to be aggressive with distance education. I remember, as you probably do, 20 years ago, people, you know, the university, college of the future had essentially no professors and everybody was going to sit at home and do all their stuff. The human element to our educational experience is an important thing. And so I think we're still going to continue to see lots of students that are going to be traditional residential students at here and KU and everywhere like that. The problem is, how do you deal with the non-traditional students, the person that maybe he's worked for 10 or 15 years and decides they want to do a career change and an adult learner, things like this. They're the folks that I think we need to be able to hit with our distance education classes. Get a soldier that comes in here at Fort Riley but is here for 18 months. They start their curriculum here, maybe a graduate degree, knowing they can't finish it. Well, guess how they can do that? They can be over stationed in Germany and finish it up. So I think we have to have a broad range of educational experiences that we offer. The key with distance education, I think we're doing a good job with some of it here, but I'm eager to learn more, is how do you make sure that the educational experience that the students get is of the same quality? And as an instructor, it can take a lot of extra time to prep for those distance classes to make sure that they're interactive and topical and all those sort of things. And I think what we're learning is just videotaping somebody and shipping it to a person is not where the forefront of distance ed is. Lots of neat software packages and things. Bottom line, we've got to be able to do both. We've got to be able to do well. And I think they complement each other. They don't take the place of each other.
I did an interview years ago with a man who told me you can learn at a distance, but you cannot become educated at a distance. Do you think that's true?
I would tend to probably generally agree with that. I found that the people at my previous institution that really loved the distance education, for example, were folks that had already learned something and they were what you would call educated, and they had a change in their job. And, you know, they said, I need to develop some expertise and background in an area that could include a degree. And these were experienced learners. They had sort of, they knew what they needed, highly motivated for them. They said, I need to find a way to be able to do it and continue to do other things.
Is the atmosphere at Kansas State different than Mississippi?
Land grants, universities in rural states have a lot of similar characteristics. I mean, there's some things that are unique about Mississippi State or Virginia Tech or Auburn or whatever. But I tend to think there's a lot of similarities, a lot of first-generation students, a lot of people that come in from with an agriculture and farming type of background, sort of a blue-collar style to a lot of our students, both at Kansas State and Mississippi State, a good work ethic generally, students that are maybe more focused on what kind of job am I going to get when I get out, tends to be also very characteristic, because you got some families, first person ever go to college. You know, they're paying that money, and they want to make sure that when Joe or Susie comes out that, you know, they're going to have an opportunity to do something that their parents couldn't do. So those similarities are very, very are certainly there.
You take over the reins here at Kansas State, facing a number of problems within the university itself. One of the most striking has got to be the audit that was just released by the Kansas Board of Regents. Now, I know you've not had a chance to really look at this document in depth, but from a cursory examination, what are some of your first thoughts?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm a big believer in is accountability and checks and balances. And I need somebody looking over my shoulder just like anybody else does. And I think what has to happen is whenever you make any decision, how we're going to spend money, what are we going to go raise money for, how are we going to allocate any resource, there needs to be some collective wisdom that that's the right thing to do. So on first blush, what I want to make sure is that there's appropriate checks and balances, whether it's in athletics, whether it's in research, whether it's in the president's office, that look at things and say, hey, that's an appropriate and right way to do it. And I think some of that, in my opinion, and first read, look like it's just sort of missing. So we're going to put some things in place, and we're going to have a lot of expenses reviewed by a couple sets of eyes. And what's important, though, is we're going to continue to do it. And it's not, well, we're going to do it for 2 years, tighten everything up, put good practice in place, and then after everybody sort of relaxed a little bit, we're not going to slide those. And that's very important to me. I don't want, whenever I'm done here being president, I want people to say, you know what, I knew what was going on, I knew how we were using our resources, and everything seemed reasonable, and man, I was ready to go to work because I trusted the folks in the central administration, and that's very important to me.
At first blush, this audit seems to me to admit that it's just a cursory look. It's not real in depth. Does that mean that we may have to do this again down the road?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we're going to plan to do some of it. So John Currier, new athletics director, is going to work with a couple firms. We're going to find somebody to come in and do a real thorough audit that we want to provide them with a Grant Thornton one and say, okay, I want you to dive in, and we just need best practices. We need to know, we want to look not just at where money is or where it was spent, but, you know, are our practices appropriate? Are we using good business practices? Do we have, you know, two people signing off on stuff? There's a lot of that kind of stuff that we really want to go in and try and fix, and we're going to have to bring in some help to really drill down and do that, and we're going to make those public. You know, what good does it do to say, I'm going to bring in somebody to look at it and you can't see it? Then you say, well, they must have found something, and not only did they find something, they don't want me to know about it. Now, that may not be what comes out, but if you start off at the beginning and say, we're going to get some folks to look at it, and you know what? When they get their report, you can see it. Then you go, okay, if there's nothing here, then you look at it and say, okay, they did due diligence and there's nothing here. If there is something there, then everybody knows about it. So that, again, almost no president will ever claim they're not going to be transparent and accessible. largely what will happen is after a year, people need to say, okay, he said it and he did it. And that's really ultimately what's going to be important.
The Board of Regents were not going to release this audit. Did they do so at your urging? What prompted this release?
We had a long discussion with the Board of Regents generally about the audit and the audit process as I was going through, you know, February to now. But ultimately, they owned the audit, and it was really their decision on whether or not they were going to put it forward. So I'm glad they did, because it's out in the open now, and I feel we've got everything on the table, so I can start working to solve some problems instead of everybody worrying and speculating about what's there.
Are we going to say, okay, we've got the audit, we found problems, we're going to close the door, but we're going to fix the problems? Or are we going to say, there's some problems, and somebody's going to have to be held accountable?
It's hard for me to answer that right now, and let me tell you why. I think if we just sort of say we're going to find somebody and hold them accountable, I don't want to go on a witch hunt either. What I really want to do is get it out there, analyze what's there, and if it's a personnel issue that has to be dealt with, then that's part of the solution. If it's a practices thing, then that's part of the solution. If it was part of a previous leadership team, there may be very little we can do about it. So until we sort of lay it all out there and start, you know, shuffling the pieces around some, I'm not sure what the answer is. But it's a credibility issue is really what it comes down to. And I think people are going to expect, and if you saw the Board of Regents, they directed me to come back on October 1 and give them a report back and say, basically, here's what we're going to do. Here's our plan. Here's the audit results that we've gone in and dove in. So that's out there, and everybody's going to know what those are.
Looking ahead now, how much of a distraction has this audit? How much of a distraction have these other problems been to what you want to do?
It's been a significant distraction, there's no question. The last couple weeks in particular, it's several months, but really the last couple weeks when I've been out visiting, and we go out to a Catbacker event, for example, it's got 500 people in Kansas City, and you're meeting and greeting, you know, what do people want to talk about? You know, well, Kirk, do you know what's in the audit? Is there some out there? Are you guys going to be using your money wisely? You know, even if they don't ask those things, they're sort of out there and they're percolating around. So it's been a distraction. And I sort of felt we kind of reached the bottom. But now that we have this thing out, hopefully we're at the bottom. And now we can start rebuilding trust. We can put out some plans. People can go, okay, it wasn't so good, but we at least understand where we're going and how we're going to fix it. And I'm a fixer, so I feel, but I've got to understand the whole thing first before I start fixing something. If you don't have the whole picture, you may not make the best decision.
So where's the university going now?
Oh, I think the future's bright. We've got excellent faculty. If you look at this last year on the athletic field across the board, we had an outstanding year. Our men's golf, women's golf, baseball, you know, most people know about that. We had our student teams continue to excel, so crop judging, soil judging, some of these areas. We had the top national teams again. This has been really a public distraction away from a lot of terrific successes that were here at the institution. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to spend the next 6 months be out visiting, talking to people, alumni, legislators, whoever that would like to visit with the president, people on and off campus too. And then in January, we're going to start a long-term visioning, strategic planning exercise. It'll take a year, and it's going to involve focus groups on campus and all that stuff, and we'll call it K-State 2025, and it's what we're going to look like in the year 2025. So where should we be ranked? How many students should we have? What should the campus footprint look like? We say we want an international campus. What does that mean? And I want something out there so that nobody ever completely agrees with anything. But I'd like people to go, I had a chance to input, I like what's there, and this keeps with the character of my university, but clearly is going to take us in a direction that we all would like to go. And if I can achieve that, you know, that'll be significant. Then that drives resource allocations. When I sit down and do private fundraising, it drives that. And so, you know, you got something out there that we say, Kirk, are we going to do this? I need to say, well, you know, is that sort of in line with what we want to do, or is that going to be just off on the side? So it can make a difference, so we don't just sort of grow like an amoeba, but have a little bit of direction.
When you stepped on campus the first day, was there anything in the back of your head that said to you, this is one thing that I really want to do?
Yes, and that's an easy one. One of the things I want is after the first year, I want the faculty and staff in particular to say, I know more about what's happening in this university in the last year than I knew in the last 30 years. So that's it. If I can continue to communicate effectively across campus, most people don't want to be president. They want somebody else to do it. But they certainly want to know what's going on, what I'm thinking, how, not, I don't want to say how I'm spending my time, but, you know, they want to know, hey, is the president out there working for us? And where does he think we ought to go? And is he working to solve some of these major issues we have on campus, faculty salaries, the library needs additional funds, you know, all these sorts of things. And if you don't know it, you say, well, I'm sure he's not. But if I at least communicate what you're doing, you may say, well, I'm not sure I like this, but at least I know. And I think that's critical.
On today's Perspective program, the thoughts of the new president of Kansas State University, Dr. Kirk Schultz. Schultz was chosen by the Kansas Board of Regents to succeed John Wiefold, who had served as K-State head for 23 years. Schultz comes to Kansas State after serving as vice president for research and economic development at Mississippi State University. President Schultz is a member of ABET, the recognized accreditor for college and university programs in applied science, computing, engineering, and technology, and a member of its Engineering Accreditation Commission. He also is an active member of the American Institute of Chemical Engineers and the American Society for Engineering Education. Perspective is a weekly public affairs program produced by Research and Extension at Kansas State University. I'm Richard Baker, and this is the K-State Radio Network.